This is Catherine Wall from the Marion Cheek Jackson Center, and it is March 23rd, 2022. We are at St. Joseph's Church. And if you'd like, go ahead.
I am Pat Jackson. I am daughter-in-law to Miss Marion Cheek Jackson, native of Chapel Hill, here at sharing continued documents and memorabilia from the collection archives of Miss Marion Cheek Jackson.
I'm Anna Spencer, co-director of public history at the Jackson Center.
All right. So tell us what you brought.
What I brought today is the actual Mrs. Jackson's actual diploma from St. Augustine College. And the reason that I wanted to bring her diploma and share it for our archives today was because Mrs. Jackson was very, very headstrong and had a real value in her life for education. Education started out for her at Orange County Training School, and I've brought a memorial program for Orange County Training School and Lincoln High School alumni, and they share, she's kept a document that shares the class of from 1940 and before, and it goes through I would love for our audience out there to check out this archive, to check out this record, because you will see, if you are a native of Chapel Hill, you will see all of our strong warriors that were before us, you know, documented here. This memorial program documents the faculty from Orange County Training School and Lincoln High. And again, the class from 1940, you know, all the way down to 1963, you know, their names are recorded. And I would love for you to get an opportunity to look at those, to reflect, see if it's your parents, uncles, aunts that are there. And I also have Lincoln High's alma mater in the tune of Finlanda that will be documented here. You know, all the Lincoln High alumni, you know, all hail to thee, our mighty alma mater dear, the gracious name we won and all revere, the towering pines, thy vine-clad cakes abroad, the rolling hills by wandering youth explored, the widespread roof, low vaulted rooms and hails, these touching scenes shall ever thy name recall. And as you go to the site and you know, look at that, we hold them dear, it continues on, the school we long have known. We bow to these as queen upon thy throne. Spirit of liberty and joy and pride, these are thy counsels that with us abide. Father above, keep thee from harm, we pray. Bless Lincoln High to the eternal day. And this alma mater is important, and I got just chills just reading it. I had the opportunity to go to Lincoln High when I was in the seventh grade, so to have a look at, and I don't know if I've ever I heard of the you know, just going there 1 year, not being involved in all of the memorabilia and all of the accolades that the school, but you certainly felt the pride. And just getting an opportunity to read this alma mater this morning, just very proud to have been, to have spent 1 year at the historic high school.
Now, was that sung at graduation?
It was sung at graduations, at beginning of football games, and any time that the Tigers were getting themselves ready for any kind of introductions or whatever. Yeah, that song was sung.
And when you were growing up, you know, a seventh grade and earlier, did lots of people in the community come out for those football games?
Oh, yes. That was the big event of your week. Any, there were, during the early parts of celebrations on the UNC campus, especially during this time of the year, our March Madness, things closed down for those celebrations. And the same thing when I was growing up younger for Lincoln High, when championships were won, when proms and dances, the early part of the day would shut down early in preparation for big celebrations. Parades, you know, down Merritt Mill, you know, and, you know, in the area. So just like it was happening on the campus, you know, it was happening in our, you know, small, like, neck of the wood, you know, so to speak, on this side. And go ahead.
I was going to say, what day of the week did they play the games?
Friday.
Mm-hmm. Was it nighttime?
Yes, Friday evening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so celebrations went on early, you know, Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. You know, it started and, you know, pretty much carried on till the beginning of the game and then the, you know, ending. Usually, I think 7 to 9, yeah, I remember being out at 10:30 one time, you know, after some festive activity was going on, and, you know, a young person, that was pretty late. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty late.
Where did, you know, after the game, where did people go?
People usually came up on Graham Street on the corner, Bill's Barbecue, that area. That was there, that was the gathering point down at Hargraves, of course, and right on Lincoln Center's ground. And then for the older people, young people at that time, you know, there were always their secret spots. That's a very interesting question as we continue to record the history of Chapel Hill and lots of our neighbors. Anybody earlier than, you know, in the 50s, you know, that were Lincoln High School high schoolers, that would be a question for them. Where were the hangouts,
right?
You know, of the night or the event? Because certainly there were special hangouts for special, you know, kinds of activities. You know, some of them were in Durham, some of them were in Hillsborough. You know, lots of them were in, you know, this Chapel Hill area as well. So that would be a good question for those teenagers. I'll have to remember to ask them myself.
Yeah.
As well.
So who were the big rivals for Lincoln?
Durham and Hillsborough, yeah. Orange High School, you know, and that continued on when we were at Chapel Hill High School as well, and Hillside, mm-hmm. in, you know, from Durham is what comes to mind right now. Another good question for them as all, because they were champions. They won lots of trophies and championships, but I'm not sure of you know, the where they were and the, you know, I know the ACC and the Big Ten and all that, but I don't know where they were. Mm-hmm. We'll have to, you know, get that documented and recorded because it's important.
Yeah. And I've seen photographs of the Lincoln Band. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about when you were at the game, kind of paint the picture? What would you see and hear?
At the games, the big, the band was all sorts of huge instruments with choreographed steps, with uniforms that were long, flashy, drum major, and the name escapes me, but our drum major for Lincoln has stepped out there with long legs, stepping up high, big hat all down, and a huge stick. And I mean to tell you that was a twirler and a mover and fast and lots of moves. The Jackson 5, Usher, none of those guys had steps like this guy. He was something to see, bright, flashy uniform, and loud, and you know, as soon as the instrument started, the drum major had already set the stage. The cheerleaders went into action. I mean, up, flipping, swaying, swishing, and stepping all around. So it was pretty big and pretty festive, you know, at all the games. And it started, like I said, you know, after school ended early, town, you know, shutting down or setting up early for taking care of all the events that would be going on. You knew, you could hear all around when the action started, when the band started up, you know, loud and, you know, going, you know, letting themselves be heard and be known. You knew it was festivity day. Mm-hmm. Yep, in town.
Did any of the local restaurants or stores do like concessions at the games or anything like that?
I don't remember. I don't remember being any concessions or anything. The field, the Lincoln Center was the school. The activities were in Carrboro, out where the Carrboro town hall, police station, that area behind them was a huge field. That's where the games were held.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so
they have bleachers and lights.
Yeah, it was bleachers and lights. Mm-hmm, is all I remember being out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any concessions or anything. Another good question for those teenagers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another good question for those teenagers. I don't remember. I was pretty young. Well, seventh grade, but I was not. My focus was not into everything around. It was pretty much hanging out.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The other thing that I brought to share, and as I shared earlier, education was very important to Mrs. Jackson, but also family was important to her. And at the start of her getting ready to go finish up at high school and get ready to go to college, her parents, her mother was sick and her aunts were sick. So she was the one that was the caregivers, you know, still at home, you know, making sure that everybody was taken care of physically. So she always had a fear that going to college was going to be interrupted. And when I saw her diploma from St. Augustine College, she had talked to me about it. You know, how proud and how she had strived so hard to, you know, make sure that everybody at home was taken care of so that she could get back to school. And when I saw her St. Augustine College, Raleigh, North Carolina, this certifies that Marion LeVette Cheek, you know, has successfully fulfilled the requirements for Bachelor of Arts in the day of May 1946. I was reminded of how proud she was of this diploma, having jumped over and made it through the hurdles that she always feared that would keep her away, because it was her nature to always be there for others, always to help, always to make provisions. And, you know, I was just reminded of how proud she was to, you know, get that diploma. Mm-hmm. And during her, you know, times of, you know, making sure that diploma was awarded to her, she was very instrumental in keeping up with her classmates. And I have here a class of 1946, their birthdays that she had recorded to always keep up with the statistics of her class. I don't know if that was assigned to her or whatever, but, you know, all of the graduates that were there, all of the graduates, and at the time that this information was recorded, all of the, you know, their address, and again, just keeping up with them as well.
Can you, I know that we have, you know, interviews with Mrs. Jackson, and I know that we have, you know, a lot of her history recorded in bits and pieces, but I wondered if you might go back to what you know about her early life, like when and where she was born and her family and how she grew up.
Yes. Mrs. Jackson was born here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The home that I presently live in at 124 Merritt Mill Road is the house that she was born in. Her grandfather, Reuben Cheek, built that house. Her father, Kenan Cheek, raised in that house three daughters. Marion, LeVette Cheek, Ruby Cheek, and Noni Cheek. Those three girls were everything to Kenan and Pearl Cheek, let me tell you. He was a laborer for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He worked in the, I'm not exactly sure where her dad worked on campus, but he was instrumental in, I have it documented, and I'll have to make sure that it gets in the archive, but he was instrumental in starting the first janitorial association for workers at UNC. while he was a stonemason, while he was raising his three daughters, he was also instrumental in everything that was going on in Chapel Hill. The reason that this church, St. Joseph Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, is housed at this corner where it is was because the leaders in Chapel Hill was looking for a place for a high school. These grounds were offered for the high school. And we're talking about what was in their time, Lincoln High School. This property was deemed too small, so Ken and Cheek and other members of our congregation and the leaders was given first opportunity to buy this property, and they found property at the end of Mill Road for the high school. Ken and Cheek had three daughters, Mrs. Jackson, her sister Ruby, and her sister Noni Ruth. And he was doing everything that he could to make sure they were set to go to school, do what they needed to do, go to college, and whatever. The home that he inherited from his father, Reuben Cheek, 124 Merritt Mill Road, was mortgaged to get the money to build this church, to get the land so that this church can be built. She was very instrumental in all of the community in which she lived, even at an early age. I have another letter that I'm going to submit to our archivist as well. She was away at school, and she wrote back to her aunt, "Make sure you take your medicine. I know you told me that you were going to send me some money next week, but please make sure that you have everything you need at home before you think about sending me anything, because I'm doing fine." That was who she was all of her life. She was a reader. She loved reading romance novels. I mean, stacks and stacks and stacks of romance novels she would read. She was very instrumental when she was growing up here in this church. She was, I've seen it recorded, heard it from a lot of our elders here, that she was the one that at church, if you weren't involved or doing something in church, she always had an assignment for you. "Well, you need to do this, you need to do that." One of our ministers now, Reverend Willis Farrington, attributes all of his association and, you know, growth in the Lord to Mrs. Jackson's encouragement of him, you know, as a young person here. That's what she did all of her life. She always encouraged, always made sure that everybody, that your needs were met. When she went away to St. Augustine, which was right there in Raleigh, she shared with me that she had a little difficult time staying on the campus because she was always needing to make sure that home was taken care of, her parents was taken care of. Her father died at an early age. I think he was 50 somewhere in the age of 50s when he died. And her mother remarried, but the three girls were always very close, and Mrs. Jackson was the person that the two of them looked up to. Both of them passed before Mrs. Jackson died, and she was caregiver to both of those. Her sister Ruby had no children. Her sister Noni Ruth had four boys. So those four boys, and Mrs. Jackson had two boys. So those three women, those six boys, were a total knit unit. Those boys spent all of their time. Her sister Ruby lived in Durham. Her sister Noni lived in Rocky Mount. And all of them centered at 124 Mill in Chapel Hill. And
was Mrs. Jackson the eldest sister?
She was... Before I answer that, I'll have to check to see where she was. I'll have to check.
Okay. Do you know what year she was born?
25. Yeah. February 12th, 25.
And do you know what she majored in?
The diploma said Bachelor of Arts. It's what it said. And her life was spent in finance. She was big in finance. She was she worked for North Carolina Mutual for over 25 years, and she was an actuary. Mm-hmm. Is that what? Yeah, she was an actuary. So it said Bachelor of Arts, and then she spent over 25 years at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in their blood bank. She also was the secretary for the funeral home, and all of these jobs were started in her early life and, you know, continued on after college. Her father was an archivist. For this church, he was the person that maintained records, and her being our historian is where she, you know, picked up all of those skills and traits. She was she spent another 10 years as a clerk at the dining hall at Granville Towers, talking to students every day. We have lots and lots of letters from students that shared with her how seeing her every morning, you know, would brighten, you know, their day. She traveled from Chapel Hill, where she lived at 124 Merritt Mill, taking the bus to Durham, to North Carolina Mutual, raising two sons. Her husband worked for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill as well. He worked in the geology department.
What was his name?
Boyd Jackson Sr. She maintained, she was the wheels and estate planning for Chapel Hill. And she started doing that before she went to college. Her father being the first president of the Janitorial Association, he was very instrumental in making sure that people, that the workers had proper wages and homes to be able to live in the area where they worked. He was very instrumental there. He worked the chancellor or whatever was Frank Porter Graham at the time that he was active and instrumental.
And they've named a building after him.
They have named a building
after him and Rebecca Clark.
After him and Rebecca Clark. We, Mrs. Jackson and her family, we all had the opportunity to be at that naming ceremony, and all of the family was at they redesigned and restructured that building, and we were also at that dedication as well.
Now, you mentioned that she was a fan of the romances.
Yes.
Did she ever tell you the story of how she and Boyd met?
She did not. I'll have to ask her, I'll have to ask my husband and my brother-in-law, but her friends would have been the ones to ask about that, and I did not find out. I've probably heard stories here and there, but I have, it's funny that you asked that question, because I'm still currently, finding, all sorts of documents. And Mrs. Jackson, her best friend, Irene Weaver, and Irene Tolliver Weaver and Virginia Tolliver were the best of friends. And they would always, and her sisters as well, Ruby and Noni, they would always go on trips. And they went on a cruise. And I see all these pictures of them all out on the, the little promenade and, all of that. And what's funny is, Mrs. Jackson kept lots of memorabilia, and she has the menus from the cruises.
Oh, wow.
Because they were a big thing. A cruise was a big thing. And for her to take the time away from working, these boys, her parents, her aunt and uncle, all of them lived, right down the row from each other, was a big thing. And those menus were pretty special to her. But I'll have to, Miss Neely, Miss Roberta Neely is another person that was friends with Mrs. Jackson, and I will go and ask her if she knows the story, because Mrs. Jackson married her husband, Boyd Jackson. He was a twin. It was Boyd and Floyd Jackson. They went to A&T University. They were football players. So I know there's a story there. I just know that it is, and I'll have to, explore that. They were big football players. Their son, Mrs. Jackson's youngest son, Reginald Jackson, played football for North Carolina State. And during the times that it was football season, and the ministers that would come to church. We're part of the Methodist, Christian Methodist Episcopal. We're part of the connection, so our ministers are assigned to us 1 year at a time. Sometimes they stay more than 1 year, but all of the ministers that would come, Mrs. Jackson's home was their home. And I remember she had invited one of the ministers to a football game, and her husband and his brother and all of their friends, they were a rowdy bunch. So they were at the game, and they're on the pew, sitting, I said pew, but not on the bleachers, pews at church. We're on the bleachers, and they are, one brother is sitting on one end, and significant other was sitting beside him. Then comes the minister, then comes Mrs. Jackson, then comes her husband, and then the rest of us are sitting on. But the brothers have brought their spirits with them to the game. So now they're passing their spirits from one end of the bleachers all the way down to the other. And the running and the jovial event that always came from the minister's mouth was, at the North Carolina State game, they had so much fun because the spirits were being moved from one end of the bleacher to the other, and you got in the mix because your head was going back and forth. Even if you didn't touch the spirit, you got it because you were moving, every time the spirit went up and down the line. So it was, wild and crazy. But those brothers were very close.
Were they identical twins?
They were identical twins.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how long Mrs. Jackson and Boyd Jackson were married?
Over 60 years.
Wow.
Yeah, over 60 years. Mm-hmm. And I'll have their wedding photograph. I'll have to share that at our next interview. And I'll do my due diligence to find out that romance story that goes along with that, because I know there's one, because that was a big event. I've heard a lot of our elders and a lot of people, she has the wedding party was big. So it was a big to do.
Is Mrs. Jackson somebody that you had always known growing up in Chapel Hill,
or do
you
No.
remember when you met her?
I had not always known. I would always see her, all around, but I grew up on Sunset Drive here, and Sunset Street here in the North Side neighborhood. And prior to that, my family grew up out across University Lake, was our home place. So when I was at Sunset, my area was Hargrave Center, all up Rosemary, all around. How I got to Merritt Mill Road was my sister and her husband lived at 120 Merritt Mill Road with her husband's grandparents. And that was two doors over from where the Cheeks Jacksons live. the home house was there once Mrs. Jackson and her husband married. They lived some time on Graham Street. So I had probably seen her, you know, because you see all the, you know, ladies and then the children. My husband is a year older, you know, than me, but, you know, not knowing, you know, of her. And the teenagers, when I was growing up, we had to go to church. And we went where stuff was happening at church. Here, the ministers would always have a graduate student from Duke as trainees doing all sorts of things with the young people. So there was always something going on here. So I went from my home church, Neville's Chapel, out past University Lake, First Baptist, then St. Joseph, that circle. Every now and then my aunt went to Second Baptist. So every now and then you would go to something going on at Second Baptist, but most of the action that I was interested in was happening over here.
Including your husband.
Including my husband. Yep.
So when you started coming here as a young person, that's when you got to sort of know Mr. Jackson a little bit better.
Yeah. And as I shared, once I started coming here, you were always encouraged to get involved. So there would always be, you'd always be called on to do something. You would always be called on to read. You would always be called on to, when there were dinners and stuff, you'd always have to serve, or you'd always be asked to clean up. You'd always be asked to, you know, do something. You were encouraged to do something. And she would always, you know, ask you, what can you do? You know, so if you could use a typewriter and stuff, you know, she was always writing speeches, always recording something, always taking notes from somebody needing something done. So you would always be given, if you could type, you would always be given something to type up so that you can turn that back into Mrs. Jackson. She needs that, you know. Make sure that you get that to Miss Jackson. And after you clean up, you have to go upstairs and let Mrs. Jackson know, all the young, everybody in your group that's working here today, you have to give that to Mrs. Jackson because she has to get that recorded. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds like she had a pretty good sense of finding out what people's gifts were.
And I think you're right, yes. Yep, I think you're right.
And did that usually result, you know, as young people came in and they were kind of coming in to do the fun thing, but then kind of brought in to do other stuff, did they typically stick around a little more?
They did. They did stick around a little more because once you were around now, so now you were involved in children's church, you were involved in the choir. You were involved in having to read scripture for afternoon programs, and then they would give you opportunity to find out what kinds of things you wanted to do. So when it came time for dances, they would always make sure that you had money to get something new to wear to the dance that was now happening at Hargraves, because they had all got it set up. Mm-hmm. Now you were had an opportunity to go to the Presbyterian Church because their young people were going skating. So you didn't have to worry about any money or anything because it was already set up for you. Mm-hmm. She had the connections and, you know, she did all the preliminary. There were outings at the dairy bar. So you could always grab your voucher to get, when you go to the dairy bar, you didn't have to worry about whether you had any money or not.
What kinds of things would you all get at the dairy bar?
Oh, we get banana splits and cherry sundaes and milkshakes. But banana splits were my thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the majority of the time, you was not worried about even eating or drinking anything because, remember, you were dressed to the nine and you were there for one other thing only. You were not worrying about having no ice cream spill on nothing. Mm-hmm. So
you were dressed to impress.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It was ulterior motives that were going on.
So one thing I wanted to follow up on from last time that you said is you mentioned that a lot of times with the churches that they offered all these youth programs because young people need to come in and be around the church and be in the church until they feel the call or the spirit themselves mm-hmm. to want to be there of their own accord. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about how that happened for you.
How that happened for me was I had shared that I had grew up at Neville's Chapel, that's my mother's home church. And after we moved to Sunset, I started coming to First Baptist First. Mm-hmm. And I got baptized at First Baptist. But that baptism was everybody was getting baptized. I don't even remember, you know, going up when they opened the doors of the church and say, you know, do you want to have a relationship with God? I don't even remember that happening at First Baptist, but I do remember getting baptized over there. And not until, and then still, you know, coming here to St. Joseph and getting, I mean, you know, growing up and, you know, interacting with the youth, then, you know, coming to church, still coming because it was an expectation. You had to come. You had to go to church. That expectation now is turning into getting involved, still, you know, being encouraged by the elderly people, helping out, and still following, going through the motions. Probably not until I was probably 1970. We had a young minister here, and he was preaching. And what he said was, you'll go through life thinking about others trying to help, and at some point you're going to have to stand on your own two feet, just you and God. And when he said that, I said, I'm going to have to stand on my own two feet, me and God. That's when I started to think about now all the things that you, all the sermons that you're hearing, all the preaching that you're hearing. You're seeing God at work modeled through the elders in your church, but not until then did I ever associate that standing on your own two feet as your relationship with you and the Lord. What he would be telling you, not realizing that the things that you were doing was the path that he had already set, because we have a path that's set for us when we come from our mother's womb, because we're put there by the Lord, period, there at that womb, is what I believe. So after hearing and realizing that I'll have to stand on my own two feet with my, and give an account, that was the other, you have to stand on your own two feet and give an account to God, that I put that together to realize that that was being spoken to me. That was the Lord saying to me, okay, I've set you up. I've kept you, you know, safe, kept you doing. Your path has already been set. Now I need to get your attention, is what that said to me. And he got my attention. And I hadn't prior to that did the actual study, because everything that you did, you went to Sunday school, you went to church, you went to afternoon programs, you were involved, you were doing this. But that was a process. All those things that you were doing, they were in your mind, but not relational to your mind. Not for me, anyway. You know, and, you know, not until after then did the relational aspect of my relationship with God, you know, start to change the way that I was processing and doing things. Because once the relational aspect of it, you know, comes, then you are a studier, you are a reader, you're more focused now on the actual word and how it interacts, relates, or changes. Well, how it changes you, because it does.
Sounds like all the things you've been hearing in church and whatnot, they meant something different.
It meant something different. The visual things that you would see the elders do, you could understand, you know, what was happening at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start to realize the relationship is between you and God, and he's the controller of everything that you're seeing and doing, mm-hmm. at that point.
Thank you.
The one other item that I brought today before we wrapped up was Mrs. Jackson's sister, Noni Ruth, that lived in Rocky Mount, married Charles Woods, who was one of the original members of the Navy Band. And they had an presentation at Hargraves Center in the 80s, and it's the history of the Navy Band, and I wanted to bring that to pave the way, because there's, of those four boys of Mrs. Jackson's sisters, only one of her sons is living now. His name is Michael Woods. And I bring this Navy Band history to set up for his interview of his parents and his dad's life with the Navy Band. We'd be able to get all the inside story and the connection there with the Jacksons and the Woods and Chapel Hill.
Now the Navy Band, the sailors who were part of that, can you just say a little bit more about that?
The sailors who were part of the Navy Band came to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and were not allowed to be housed anywhere on the campus. So they were housed at Hargraves Center and all the surrounding neighborhoods. And it was just, I could not even fathom how the Navy Band, a part of the our government, and then they were asked to come to perform at the university, and then all the members, because they were black, they couldn't stay with the other members. It was just crazy. It was just unthinkable, you know. But you know, all at the same time, because your skin was black, it determined what you could do and what you could not do. And they were fighting for their country, but yet at home.
And they came from all over the country.
They came from all over the country. They came from all over the country.
I've seen a lot of pictures in the university's archive of dances that I assume are at Hargraves, because it's all the black sailors in the band and young black women who were dancing with them. Those dances, would that all have been local young women going to those dances?
Or I don't know.
I'll have to get some of those pictures and see if anybody recognizes anyone.
That would be awesome.
Do you know how many of, or you know, do you know of other Navy Band members who married someone local to Chapel Hill after living here?
No,
only one.
Just him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just Charles Woods.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful photos of that band in parades and Chapel Hill and other things like that. So, and Mrs. Jackson was in college during World War II as well. Do you know if there were a lot of people in this community that served in the war? I know Mr. Garland Fushi served.
I was trying to think of ones that are still alive. I know a lot of them that served, but that's the only one that I know that's still alive. you know, it was his brother, Robert Fashee, Mr. All the Farringtons, Mr. Mac Farrington, Mr. Russell Edwards, you know, all of those, but I don't know any of them that are still alive.
Mm-hmm. Some of them may have children or grandchildren mm-hmm. who have some materials from the war, mm-hmm. heard stories.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you want to share with us before we turn this recorder off?
I think I'm going to put a pause in there because I have some research and follow-up to do. And I'm going to just pause it at this point. And, you know, gather some more research and be prepared to come back for another sitting.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.